Well, not that you're in the mood for an R-rated comedy, but if you were, Tropic Thunder is the funniest movie of the summer. Saw it this afternoon. Still laughing about it. Can't explain it, won't explain it. There are many laughs in that movie that are nothing short of wrong. But I thought absolutely hysterical. So, in a way, Tropic Thunder makes a perfect bookend for Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. started the summer movie season with a great performance in the highly entertaining Iron Man and ends the summer with an equally entertaining performance, completely different, in Tropic Thunder. But he's not alone. Everybody is funny in it, and everybody is in it. And that's all I'm saying. Big show. Not quite as big as this one, though, however. Philip Carlo is back. Many times we've explored on the show just how the underworld connects with politics, connects with business, connects internationally, controls so much more than we know. But there are people out there who do know just how deep, how long the tentacles are of the mafia. How long are the fingers of La Cosa Nostra? How deep into our pockets do they go? And what are they really up to? Philip Carlo is one. Unlike other mob books, though, for Phil Carlo, this new one about the guy they call Gas Pipe, this one is personal. And we'll talk more about that next hour. This hour, I consider it an honor that Dr. Jeff Meldrum of Idaho State University, the world's authority on Bigfoot, will comment on the story of the week, maybe the story of the summer, but it was almost the story of the millennium. And who knows? I guess it could still possibly be, but it doesn't look good. The Bigfoot in the freezer story you've been hearing about on Coast to Coast and reading about on coasttocoastam.com. And did you catch Seth Shostak, the senior astronomer of SETI, at the press conference? Did you hear what he said? Why was he there? Well, he just also might join us this hour to talk about that too, hoping to take a call from him and maybe a call or two from you too, a little bit later on this hour after crypto news next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so much to get to, but as you know by now, results from tests on genetic material from alleged remains of one of the mythical half ape and half human creatures, and I use the word mythical in quotes from the Associated Press. Results from tests on that genetic material made public at the news conference on Friday, held after the claimed discovery swept the internet and this radio show, failed to prove Bigfoot's existence. You can find out more on that if you link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. There's a story there that'll bring you up to date, and including a new picture from a Yeti, which is a very cool photo. There's a link for that right there at the top of the page. Now, that having been said, let me just be clear. One of the two samples of DNA said to prove the existence of the Bigfoot came from a human, and the other was 96% from an opossum, according to Kurt Nelson, a scientist at the University of Minnesota who performed the DNA analysis just a few blocks from where I'm speaking right now. Results of the DNA tests were revealed in an email from Nelson and distributed at the Palo Alto, California news conference held by Tom Biscardi, host of a weekly online radio show about Bigfoot. Biscardi said the DNA samples may not have been taken correctly and may have been contaminated, and that he would proceed with an autopsy of the alleged Bigfoot remains currently in a freezer at an undisclosed location with Dick Cheney. Now, I didn't hear everything on George's show last night on Coast to Coast AM, but how can a DNA sample be accidentally contaminated with possum, right? Or for that matter, how could a DNA sample not be taken correctly and test positively for possum? Is there a possum part of the body? possibly. Even in Georgia, I don't think it's possible to accidentally contaminate a Bigfoot sample with possum. Now, I lived in Georgia for a long time. I have a tremendous fondness for the state, so I can tell you on the highest of authority that there are very few people walking around Georgia eating and, you know, catching possum. Even with those good old boys at that press conference that supposedly just came upon a dead Sasquatch, it's hard to believe that they contaminated the DNA samples they were sending up to the lab because they had neglected to wash their hands after a hearty BBQ possum sandwich. It doesn't happen. Was there frozen possum meat in the same freezer where they were storing the supposed Bigfoot, you know, saving it for an upcoming family reunion or Easter? Or was it a stall technique to keep the hoe down going? These guys know it's a fake, for example, and they just had to throw something into the DNA kit on the way to the lab just to stall. Could it be that our assumption that Bigfoot is some sort of missing link between apes and humans could be false? Perhaps this Bigfoot is real and humans actually evolved from possums. Or perhaps these Georgia guys are telling the truth. Could it be that they found a body that looks like these suspicious pictures online, that they hauled it out, carved it up, put it in a freezer, and the reason why one of these DNA samples comes back testing positive for human is that it is a real human inside the suit? Could it be that some poor schlub had bought one of those Bigfoot costumes made by the guy I heard on George's show last night, went into the North Georgia woods to scare somebody or have some fun, and he ended up having a heart attack and dying inside the suit in the woods? And then they came upon the guy just laying there. Or maybe there could have been an authentic Bigfoot DNA sample from this mysterious freezer in question, but it was contaminated by the blood of some dead guy that was already in the freezer that they were saving for, you know, an upcoming family reunion or Easter. Anyway, it's too early for me to say that it's a hoax for 100% certainty. Maybe these guys aren't the ones doing the duping. Maybe they are the ones being duped. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for now, for just a little while longer. Anyway, Dr. Jeff Meldrum coming up in a few minutes, and we'll talk to him about it. Hoaxes are so distasteful and potentially damaging. Do you remember one of the most damaging and enduring hoaxes of all time? The publication in 1905 of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. If you don't know that hoax, you can look it up at coasttocoastam.com. Remember when in 1983 a German magazine bought 62 volumes of the, quote, lost diaries of Hitler, and the London newspaper The Times reportedly paid about $400,000 for exclusive extracts of the book. However, within weeks, the diaries were proved to have been printed on modern paper with modern ink and full of historical inaccuracies. Still fooled some experts. Or the world's most infamous visual hoax, the autopsy, the alien autopsy. Or another group who perpetrated the hoax, Milli Vanilli. Singers Rob Pilatus and Fabrice Morvan, found to be lip-syncing models who paraded around pretending to be the vocalists who did the studio singing. Maybe these guys from Georgia are the Milli Vanilli of Bigfoot research. Maybe they didn't know what they were doing was wrong until it was too late. Anyway, again, we'll talk about that with Dr. Jeff Meldrum coming up in just a second. Anyway, and let's not forget the lesson we learned earlier this week. Also a story we linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Mexican archaeologists have discovered a maze of stone temples in underground caves, some submerged in water and containing human bones, which ancient Mayans believed was a portal where dead souls entered the underworld. Clad in scuba gear and edging through narrow tunnels, researchers discovered the stone ruins of 11 sacred temples and what could be the remains of human sacrifices at the site at the Yucatan Peninsula. I guess those people in scuba gear going through the maze of stone temples. Does that make them stone temple pilots? Archaeologists say Mayans believed the underground complex of water-filled caves leading into dry chambers, including an underground road stretching some 330 feet, was the path to a mythical world known as Xibalba. So while those passageways may not lead somebody to a mythical underworld, at least we know that the portal itself wasn't mythical, nor was the passageway. It's pretty cool. Some things are what they seem. Unlike those Chinese gymnasts. Did you catch that this week? They appear to be too young to compete legally because they are too young to compete legally. Haven't been able to prove it to get any of those medals back, but funny. In the U.S., it's usually the other way around. Young men who are shaving off the hair on their backs and forging their passports to try to appear young enough to pitch in the Little League World Series, while in China, they forge their passports up to get pre-adolescent girls to compete as 16-year-olds. Even in cheating, the Chinese are the yin to our yang. And China is definitely yinging our yang on the ages of those gymnasts. So Bigfoot fakery, no passageway to the underworld yet. Chinese preteen pretenders. Is there anything you can depend on to be authentic anymore? Well, here's one answer. Beer. More specifically, Schlitz. The story out of Milwaukee, Pabst Brewing Company says it's going to re-release the original beer that made Milwaukee famous on draft. Pabst said Friday the Pilsner will be out on draft in about 150 locations in Milwaukee, Chicago, and Minneapolis, and then the country. It hasn't even been 2 months since Pabst brought the original recipe of Schlitz home to Milwaukee for the first time in decades. Pabst reformulated the brew to its original recipe and has been slowly releasing it through the Midwest. Just a generation ago, Schlitz was the world's best-selling beer. But after recipe changes, new Schlitz, as it were, lost ground as a brand and then disappeared. But it's back now, the original Schlitz formula that your dad knew. A lot can change in a generation, I guess. It wasn't that long ago when Schlitz was the world's best-selling beer and the cartoon character Mr. Magoo used to do their TV commercials. Hard to imagine that it wasn't that long ago that a kid-friendly cartoon character known for driving while blind and forcing others off the road at their peril could be a spokesperson for a beer. But it was, and who knows where we'll be a generation from now. Perhaps at some point in the future, even the discussion of whether or not there is proof for a Bigfoot, I mean definitive proof for a Bigfoot, will seem just as silly. It'll be everywhere, and everybody will think of the time before there was proof of Bigfoot. Dr. Jeff Meldrum joins us, Idaho State University professor and one of my favorite guests I've ever had on Coast to Coast, because you know your stuff, Dr. Meldrum. And I was thinking about you all this week with the story of the Bigfoot in the freezer. How are you doing this evening?
Just fine, thank you.
Okay. So I thought one thing right away was suspicious for me when I was watching this press conference that CNN had, and people can link up to it through coasttocoastam.com, is these two guys who, you know, seem affable enough, who say they came across a Sasquatch in the woods, said that when they needed to get an expert, they went to the internet and the name Tom Biscardi came up on every search. Now, I tried to get the name Tom Biscardi to come up under the name Bigfoot expert or Bigfoot hunter. And even with this story, I was having a hard time getting him to come up. Your name comes up a lot. Tell me, what is the reputation of Tom Biscardi in the amongst you you experts on Bigfoot?
Well, amongst the Bigfoot community, he has a known history. He was involved in Bigfoot research, quote unquote, back in the 70s. He hooked up with Ivan Marks, who was a notorious hoaxer, and helped produce a very entertaining documentary, which I think, with a little work, you can still find copies of, called In the Shadow of Bigfoot, which has some of the most ridiculous-looking costumes you could possibly come up with, portrayed as Bigfoot. He dropped out of the scene for quite a number of years, several decades, and only reemerged here about 3 years ago with this Searching for Bigfoot organization that has been financed by a number of individuals who he's convinced he might make some worthwhile return on their investments for. But in my contacts with him, he's continually either promotes or insinuates very questionable evidence in support of Bigfoot, the hand of unknown origin, which I've demonstrated is a bear paw, nothing more. He refuses to acknowledge and continues to present it as possibly a Bigfoot hand. You know, always kind of tentative, innuendo type of propositions. The supposed Bigfoot skeleton that was dug up by somebody who found this on their property had grave goods of Native Americans. I mean, it's clearly the photographs that were published on their website had no features that weren't typically human. The size was not exceptional. And it was a clear case of a felonious desecration of a Native American gravesite. So that's the kind of history and reputation that he has. And so when these gentlemen from Georgia purport that Tom Biscardi is the real Bigfoot hunter, then you really have to question their judgment.
Their criteria for what makes real. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, obviously you're not rubbing elbows with him at academic circles. You're not getting together with him at conferences and that sort of thing. What would have been the way, if these two guys really do have what they believe is a Bigfoot, what would have been the best way for them to prove that case? What could they have done other than the way they did it?
Well, they were right to have called somebody in to verify their find, but they should have called someone in or multiple individuals in, obviously not just one person's word, but multiple individuals to corroborate what they had, who had reputations or who had credentials or who had credible standing, so that their testimony would hold up. I mean, that would be an initial step, but they should have also documented the collection of the tissue samples that were sent off for analysis. Kurt Nelson is the only credible name that's associated with this whole incident. But again, he receives a vial of tissue. He has no idea where that tissue came from because it wasn't collected in a verifiable fashion. I mean, here they are in Georgia. Georgia is home to one of the largest and most famous primate research centers in the world, Yerkes Primate Center. And they could have easily picked up the phone and contacted even just a staff veterinarian from Yerkes would have carried more credibility than Tom Biscardi by a long shot. But the bottom line is simply they need to show the body. I mean, this game, this shell game of letting unreputable individuals look at it and tout that it's authentic, but yet keep it hidden, keep moving it from one location to another, and then only affording these photographs that leave a great deal to be desired. I mean, they reveal enough to me that it clearly suggests that it's very unlikely that they have a real body. Now, don't get me wrong. I hope they do. I mean, if they did, I'm all ready to serve up, crow to my colleagues, the naysayers amongst my colleagues.
Right. It probably probably a few people at the university who've given you grief over the last couple of years. You probably would love the chance
double helping.
Well, hang on to that, because I want to come right back to that. I think that that blurry photo concept is, I mean, it's one thing if it's a blurry photo of a moving object in the woods. How do we get a blurry photo of something that's frozen? I mean, it's right there in a freezer. That we'll pick up too, and we'll ask more about what you do see in the photo. Perhaps what you see that might lead you to leave open the possibility that they have something. And we'll get to that coming up next with Dr. Jeff Meldrum, the expert on Bigfoot in the world. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. We'll also shoot the numbers at you so you can join the conversation too. We'll get to a couple of calls before the top of the hour, I promise. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. Jeff Meldrum, with the definitive book on the Bigfoot experience in America and around the world. But this guy's been following the story, and that's why I'm drawing our comments about this week's developments about the Bigfoot in the freezer hoax. At least that's the way it's looking. We have some more on the website at coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Jeff Meldrum has been referenced several times in news stories about this, but he's commenting on the latest coming up in just a moment. Also, we just might hear from Seth Shostak as well, from SETI. He was at the press conference, and I just thought that was so interesting to see him in the CNN piece. What was a guy who, you know, works for SETI doing at a press conference that had to do with the American Yeti? We might be able to find out this hour if he gives us a call. Coming up before the top of the hour, Philip Carlo then joins us next hour. The new book is called Gas Pipe. It's another in his explorations of the life of the underworld, and we'll talk about how the international mafia is growing. And if anybody knows the future of the mob in America, it's Philip Carlo. We'll talk about that later on this evening on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, I threw out some questions earlier when I was kicking around the press conference. And so let me run a couple of them by you, if that's okay. Because, as you said, we don't know how these DNA samples could have gotten contaminated. But do you have any thoughts on why Kurt Nelson, the researcher from the University of Minnesota, how he could end up with a sample for possum from what could possibly be a Bigfoot DNA sample? I mean, there really just isn't any connection to that, is there?
Oh, there isn't any sensible connection. I don't know what the details of the email are. I spoke with Kurt, let's see, today's Saturday. It would have been, I think, Thursday or Wednesday, and at that point, he couldn't obviously discuss many details because he had signed a non-disclosure agreement, but he did just simply let me know that there were no results, and he didn't anticipate that there would be any results in time for the press conference. So I was quite surprised when they were said to have distributed an email from him with those results.
Yeah, pretty weird.
To have enough sequence to have drawn those conclusions definitively takes a bit of time, and so I'm not going to at this point question the veracity of that email, but there are some unanswered aspects that I would want to check with Kurt again before
we'll bring
drawing
a
any conclusions.
We'll bring a couple other people into this conversation before we're done. Thank you again for giving us time on this. But, okay, so that doesn't make any sense. And then for the same reason, then, without having seen it, no reason to think that Bigfoot DNA would be the same as human DNA, right? I mean, that there would have to be genetically some difference that would mark... Right. So that's not even a possibility that Bigfoot are humans and they just simply appear different, but genetically are the same.
But bear in mind that, say, chimpanzees, only differ from humans in their overall DNA by, something like 3 to 4%. So to take up that difference, you have to have a sizable amount of sequence. If you just take a very small sequence, and I remember them saying something like 500 base pairs, just in the supposed email. That's just a little teeny infinitesimally small glimpse of the sequence. And so it's very possible that if you just randomly, or not randomly, but if you took a locus of a chimpanzee and from the mitochondria and only did 500 bases, you might hit a spot that is almost or is identical to human, because we have so much in common with them. So no definitive conclusion could be drawn from only 500 bases is what I'm getting at. So
okay, fair enough. You saw the photos. Yeah. We all saw the photos. What do you, the world's biggest expert on Bigfoot, what do you, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, see in those photos?
Well, I mean, let me draw on my expertise as an anatomist, having dissected many, many cadavers, both of humans and primates and other vertebrates. The first photo that was released and widely circulated with the thing stuffed into the freezer didn't look compelling to me at all. The hair did not have a natural look. But what was telling was there was no mass. It seemed to be. It looked like a rug. Or an empty costume, more likely, stuffed into this freezer with the head cocked there, and then a gut pile dropped on it for good measure. Unfortunately, the Scientific American quoted me as saying a fake gut pile. I think the gut pile is the only real thing in the freezer. it's already been distributed around the internet that there's a costume, a Bigfoot costume, that is available.
Right.
Off the shelf, online, that bears a striking resemblance to, if not identity, to this thing. And one has to ask, what were they thinking when they stuck the garden hose in the freezer to fill it with water? Why, if you wanted this specimen examined by experts, would you try to freeze it into a solid block of ice? It doesn't make any sense.
No, it didn't, and yet neither of us were there at the press conference. So let me bring in somebody, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, I'd like to introduce you to, if you haven't met him before, is Dr. Seth Shostak, who is the senior astronomer at SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And you were, good evening, Seth, how are you?
Just fine, Ian, I hope you can hear me. I'm staying on a sidewalk in San Jose.
Well, you sound great. So, Dr. Shostak, Dr. Meldrum, Dr. Shostak.
Hello, hi. Pleased to meet you.
You were there at the press conference, Seth.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but wonder, what was the guy from SETI doing at a press conference about the American Yeti? What brought you there?
Well, actually, I have to tell you, it's because we do a little weekly science podcast. Are We Alone? And we do once a month a skeptical show in which we look at things like the Shroud of Turin or UFOs or, for that matter, Bigfoot. And we thought, hey, look, this is just down the street. We'll go there. So we were there in the front row with our mics, tuned up and taking a listen to it.
Great. Well, that answers that question. I thought it was really cool. Loved your quote. What did you think of what you saw at the press conference? Was there anything in there at all that was convincing?
Well, I'm afraid there wasn't. Look, they're making a very, this is a very dramatic claim that there's a species of hominids wandering around the North American continent. And keep in mind, they must be all over the continent unless these three Bigfoot guys were on their way to Disney World, because all the rest of the sightings seem to be in the Pacific Northwest. So the fact that they're in Georgia and the Pacific Northwest must mean they're all over the place, which means there must be lots of them. And so to me, that doesn't make any sense. There have to be many thousands of these things. There have been, Native Americans on this continent for 12,000 years. There have been Europeans for 400 or 500 years. And now we're just finding a body. It just didn't make any sense. And they didn't present any convincing evidence.
Dr. Meldrum, let me ask you about what Seth just said there. So You've been studying it. Do you study much about Sasquatch in the southeast of the United States? I don't remember if you did.
I haven't personally had the luxury to devote a lot of time or energy to reports from the eastern part of the United States. Since I live in Idaho, I'm my plate's pretty full with what time I can devote to the reports from the Intermountain and Western states. But I'd have to take a little exception to Seth's tack on this. He's conflating two very different things. One is the fundamental question, of which he doesn't sound to be too well informed on, and that is whether a primate does or could exist on the continent, and whether these gentlemen from Georgia have any substance to their claim that they have in their possession an actual physical body of such a primate.
You want to put a firewall between those two things?
Well, absolutely, because these fellows from Georgia are not professional researchers. Apparently they're trying to promote a commercial venture to take people out on a quote Bigfoot expedition or a Bigfoot outing. Tom Biscardi has no credentials. He's not a bona fide researcher per se, and so it is a very separate thing.
Well, let me ask Seth. You at the press conference, was there anything in there, in the front row seat that you had, that led you to think that there might be any shred of a possibility that this is a true story?
Well, I was hoping that there would be, Ian, because after all, I was willing to be convinced. And as I say, in that sense, it's somewhat analogous to UFO reports. It's not impossible that there could be visitors. It's not impossible, as was just said, that there could be some undiscovered primates. We do find new species. Most of the species on Earth have not yet been discovered. Mind you, they're mostly bacteria. But then all these red flags go up, namely that it's clearly commercial in intention. They
right.
won't answer certain questions because the guy who found Bigfoot couldn't even remember when he found it. This is a guy who serves as a police officer. He couldn't remember the date he made the biggest discovery of his life. And those are all red flags. And the fact that they call a press conference, and, you know, the press at first was also quite accepting that maybe there was something here. They hoped there was. But these guys refused to give them any evidence that would convince them that this wasn't a hoax. I mean, it just looked like a hoax from the start. And they wouldn't dissuade us from that point of view with some good evidence.
Yeah. Ian, if I could interject again,
yeah.
I mean, and I don't mean to be overly critical here, but again, Seth, you're slipping from one point to the other. You say you want to be convinced, and yet you sound as if you're relying on this one incident to convince you one way or the other. I'd recommend that you take a look at my book and get a much better sense of what evidence there is from a much more objective and balanced treatment than from this sensationalized circus, the carnival act. To equate this as either the vindication, the refutation of the question of whether Sasquatch exists or not is just not a very scientific approach to the issue.
Well, and I've been remiss to not mention your book by name, Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. It's in soft cover now?
It is, as well, right. Yes.
It's a great book, Seth. I know you would enjoy it. Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science by Dr. Jeff Meldrum. Let me ask you, Seth, you were at the press conference. When did it turn? How many minutes into the press conference did you feel the mood of the room, of this willing and accepting international media? At what point did it begin to go south?
Well, the whole press conference ran an hour, maybe a little bit less, and it was mostly Q&A. It was mostly questions. There was introduction mostly by Biscardi and then one of the gentlemen from Georgia. And for the first 20, 25 minutes, the questions were the usual reporters' questions: who, what, where, why, you know, establishing the bones of the story. But about 20, 25 minutes into it, there were people who were very well versed in the history of not only this case, but also Biscardi's history. And they began to probe, and they weren't being gentle about it. And at that point, in fact, the answers were so disingenuous that it began to provoke laughter. And when I began to hear the reporters, there were a couple of ladies from ABC sitting next to me, and they began to laugh. When they began to laugh, I think at that point you could say that it was headed in the anti-North direction.
The anti-North direction. Not south, but not heading toward north anyway. Very good. Seth, thank you so much for the time. I always enjoy hearing you on Coast to Coast AM. God bless you and have a great night.
Thank you.
Dr. Seth Shostak. So, Jeff, again, Sasquatch, legend meets science. Is there anything out of what you have seen that gives you a glimmer that maybe this story might end up being true? And that these guys are just bumbling yahoos, but that they do actually have something.
Well, not yet. Nothing that they've done in their treatment of the subject or their defense of it has been compelling. One of my colleagues, Dr. Chris Whittier, was in attendance at the conference and drew attention to the fact that the close-up of the teeth showed six incisors. And he challenged Biscardi, are you trying to tell us that this specimen has six incisors and it's a primate? And Biscardi said, well, yes. And there's, just details like that.
I don't get the significance of that. I know.
People probably don't know. Primates only, as ourselves included, only have four upper incisors. The costume had just flat artificial teeth that looked like incisors. And so Biscardi was asserting that it had six incisors across the upper jaw. He defends that by saying, well, this isn't human. It's not an ape. It's something altogether new, which is just, grasping at straws because the costume isn't anatomically accurate at all.
Well, and so at this point, it's got to be what? In order for them to recover from this anti-North direction, what do they need to do for mainstream science to accept that this is a Bigfoot in the freezer?
They have to produce the body. They have to bring the body out for viewing and testing by academics, all being documented by the media.
Could you get by with just a head or an arm?
Oh, sure. I mean, but they have to produce something physical, not just a photograph and not a piece of tissue of unknown, of uncertain provenience. So, I mean, and it's, I don't understand their strategy. And, whether it's paranoia that someone's going to swoop in and take it away from them. And that seemed to be hinted at the press conference, I guess. One of the snippets I saw, he made an allusion to, if you discovered the most valuable diamond in the world, would you let just anyone come in and look at it? I mean, I suspect that's what will happen in the end, is that the body will never be produced and it will be blamed on some, conspiracy, some unknown agency that's confiscated it or that it's disappeared for this reason or that, because there's no way out. I mean, I'm so doubtful that there's a real body involved and that one will never be produced. There's no way out. There would be no way out for them otherwise.
Well, very good. That's where we'll leave it. And thank you so much for giving us the extra time. You were as interesting as I thought you would be on the subject. And I look forward to getting you back on again sometime as a guest. What's your next book? When's that coming out?
Oh, it'll be a year or two. I've been diverted to some other academic responsibilities.
actually having to teach, you mean? Actually having to show up for class?
I'm having to write textbooks, instead of this. No, yeah, this is just one part of my research program, and so it's always a balancing act.
You did say textbooks and not sex books, correct?
Text, right. Text. A dissection book.
I just thought I'd check. I didn't know what they were making you do at Idaho State University to keep your tenure. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Jeff Meldrum. And again, the book is Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. And sorry we didn't get more calls on, but when you got, two guys like that, I guess the time goes pretty quickly. Gas Pipe is the new book out by Philip Carlo, Confessions of a Mafia Boss. It's a new New York Times bestseller. It is so interesting, and it's personal this time. Talking about the mob, the international mafia, just how far is the reach of the mob, and what's the future of the mafia? If anybody's going to know, it's Philip Carlo. We'll talk about Gas Pipe next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.